if you would, open your Old Testaments to the book of 1 Kings. Last week I talked about Psalm chapter 3. Afterwards, I was sort of let down because I didn't say some things I'd like to have said. The Lord certainly is our shield. He is our glory. He is the lifter of our head. There are things that weigh us down. There are things that trouble our heart. There are things that are overwhelming. But it is our Lord who can console and lift and help and provide. And that He is our glory. And I appreciate the comments that Jeff made in regard to the Lord's Supper, that as we think of the Lord's Supper and the passages that we looked at in Matthew and we could look at in other Gospels, Jesus came as a servant. I appreciate Jeff's comments. May that be the spirit that we have. Not to serve self or the things of this world, but we're here to serve our Heavenly Father through Jesus Christ to do His will. May we grow in that very thing. And as we think about this Psalm 3 passage, it reflects the relationship. And as we study this morning, the bottom line is going to be, is that God is the hero. And we talk about our salvation. God is our hero. And as we look through those throughout the Bible that have gained the victory in their trust and obedience and sometimes suffering great things, God has given them the victory. He is the hero. Look at Revelation chapter 4 as it describes the throne scene. It was because of His will this is all made. He is the God, and none of this creation is comparable to Him. And so as we think about those things this morning, I want to do a character study about a man by the name of Jeroboam. And there are actually a couple of men. This is Jeroboam the First. And it's going to be at the time of the divided kingdom. And so this map I put up here to the left. You'll remember that we have been studying in 1 and 2 Samuel about Saul as king and then David as king. And then what happens is we move to 1 Kings and 2 Kings. It talks about then Solomon being a king. And then the kingdom is going to be divided about roughly 920 years B.C. And we see this map depicts what happens. And what has happened is that Solomon has not been faithful to God. Now, he was extremely wise, wiser than any of us, wiser than any man I have ever met. His problem wasn't knowledge. His problem was heart. He let his heart be moved by his foreign wives. And he allowed himself to be taken in, if you would, by this world rather than the maker of this world. And he allowed himself to drift away, and he got involved with just horrible things. And God said, I am going to rend the kingdom away from you. But I am going to postpone that for David, your father's sake. And so what was going to happen is at the end of Rehoboam's reign, the two tribes to the south, referred to as sort of one tribe and one with that, would be Judah and Benjamin, are going to be two tribes. And then there are going to be 10 tribes represented in the blue on this map that are going to be oftentimes referred to as Israel in contrast to Judah. This man by the name of Jeroboam here in 1 Kings chapter 11 is going to be the man that is going to be the king of the northern 10 tribes. And what happens in the course of this is that God sends a prophet, and this prophet Ahijah, here in the 11th chapter, comes to Jeroboam, and he has a new robe. And he takes this cloak, and he rips it into 12 pieces, and he gives 10 of those pieces to Jeroboam, and he says, you are going to rule over 10 tribes to the north, but I'm going to leave Judah and Benjamin, the other two, down below. And so this map reflects that. Well, Solomon hears about this, and so he comes after Jeroboam. And Jeroboam goes to Egypt, and he stays there till the death of Solomon. Then he comes back, and as he comes back to Israel, the people come to this new king. His name is Rehoboam. He is Solomon's son. And we find that Rehoboam then is going to be the king of Judah. At this moment, he's the king of all of Israel and Judah together, all 12 tribes. And as they make an appeal to him, they say, if you will lighten the load a little bit, your father has been really tough on us, then we'll serve you and follow you. And so what happens is Rehoboam, first of all, listens to the elders that had been counselors to Solomon and say, lighten the load on them a little bit and they'll follow you. But then he listens to his peers, those of his own, I say, age category. And I think there's some passages here to reflect they weren't necessarily good men. And they say, no, you be the tough guy here. You say, you think my daddy was a tough guy. You wait. I'm going to really put the hammer down on you. And so then they say, what part do we have in David? And the 10 tribes go to the north. When the 10 tribes go to the north, Jeroboam is going to be the king there. And you can see this picture I have to the right here. And what happens is that Jeroboam sets up two places to worship in the northern 10 tribes of Israel, and I depict those areas by the two red circles. There's Dan clear up at the north end of Israel, and there's Bethel, just really at the south end of Israel. And he sets these idols up there. And so we're going to talk some about that this morning, and some lessons that we learn. Now, If I was in your seat, I'd be getting worried because, man, that sounds like a lot of information. But we're gonna get after the fact. For a moment, I want to talk about the king down in Jerusalem for just a moment. Rehoboam. This is Solomon's son. Rehoboam had an opportunity that things could have gone well for him in Jerusalem. If he would serve God and fear God and do his will, that God would stay with him and he would bless him. But he had to make that decision. Rehoboam was established, and parallel passages over in 2 Chronicles chapter 10 and following here, which I'll be drawing from some. And it says in 2 Chronicles 12, 1 and 2, after Rehoboam had established his sovereignty and royal power, he and all Israel with him forsook the law of the Lord in the fifth year of Rehoboam's reign, because they had been unfaithful to the Lord. Shishak, king of Egypt, attacked Jerusalem. And so Shishak comes and takes a lot of stuff away, but God doesn't allow him to defeat Judah. And so they are just brought down a notch, and they're put under obligation to Egypt, and so they've had a lot of their wealth taken, and they're having to send tribute down that way. But what happens here, this happened for a reason. It's not because God was weak and unable to deliver. It's not because God wouldn't provide and provide good things for them, but they were unfaithful to him. They were absorbed in themselves rather than God. And so what happens a little bit later here in chapter 12 and verse 8 of 2 Chronicles, says, but they will become his, Rehoboam and Judah will become his, that's Egypt's slaves to Shishak, as just mentioned, so that they may learn the difference between my service and the service of the kingdoms of the country. Now, if we stop right there and we get this lesson in the yellow box, it will transform our attitudes and lives. When we understand what sin is, and the pursuit of pride and self-will, and whatever we make as God, whether it be ourselves or the things around us, that those become a heavy load. They are a taskmaster. And when we are under the burden of sin that we don't deal with before God, and we live our own way rather than God's way, you see the fruit that comes from that over time. May not seem too bad today, but as time digresses or progresses, however you like to say that, it will bite you and bite you hard. And you look back and you say, oh man, I wish I hadn't done that. I have a particular situation in mind, but I've been in many situations like this through the years. Somebody, some years ago, sitting across the table from me, someone I love very much, and she was crying and said, look what a mess I have made of things. Well, I don't think that's a completely accurate picture, that she was feeling the weight of it. But what God provides is something better. And what happens then, as this unfolds in verse 12 of the same chapter, that Rehoboam comes to his senses and he humbles himself before God. It says in this green box, and when he humbled himself, the anger of the Lord turned away from him so as not to destroy him completely. And also, conditions were good in Judah, so things improved there because he humbled himself before God. We have a hard time understanding that sometimes, is that this matter of humbling has to come from me from within, and I can't cause that to happen in somebody else. There's sometimes I'd like to help them along. But it's been my experience and what I understand the Bible teaches, humble yourself under the mighty hand of God. And if we won't humble ourselves, then we can face God with that and the consequences of that. Well, fortunately, Rehoboam humbles himself here. Okay? Now, it doesn't stay great because Rehoboam doesn't trust God and go forward. But he had some opportunities here. So what I want to do is to go forward and think about a few things. One of the things is that this man Rehoboam of the southern two tribes, before we go forward, his mother was Naamah. She was an Amorite. So his mother wasn't a Jew. Solomon had married foreign wives. And I don't know what kind of influences that had, an impact upon him, but his heart was not faithful to God like it needed to be. And so when we remember that, that is helpful. And young people, I'll just tell you, and if you're not too young, when you think about who you marry, you better think long and hard. Because next to becoming a Christian, the second most important choice that you will make, it is my persuasion, is who you marry. And so we see that story over and over again. But I also say this, because the Bible does. Once you say, I do, you did. They're yours. You better figure out how to help them and how to help yourself and to walk with God toward heaven. Now, as we think about Rehoboam, just to give you maybe, again, a moment of encouragement, this is my last real chart. I want to stop for just a moment and think about where Rehoboam started from. He was actually a servant of Solomon over this forced labor when the prophet came to him and talked to him. And as he was put in to this opportunity to be the king of Israel, he came from more commonplace, but was a man of energy and activity. And God gave him this opportunity and he called him forward to be able to serve God. Again, as we think about him, he's going to be made king. And, you know, we look at him and we say, well, he started from here and here's what God did. Well, every one of us start in a different place in this world. Some of us have blessings that we just take for granted. I mean, a bunch that we take for granted. But no matter where we start, that's not really the issue. And it is an issue, but it's not the issue. The issue is, where are we going to go from here? You get to choose. Nobody else can do that for you. Well, we find that Jeroboam starts out here with great blessing. And it's a question. The question is not, where did I start, but where will I end up? Hand in hand with that, God makes promises to him. And what he tells Jeroboam, the king of the northern 10 tribes, is that he will serve God and be faithful to God and obey the voice of God, that God will bless him, and that the 10 tribes could prosper if they would follow God. What happens in the text that we read a while ago is that Jeroboam doesn't trust God. God put him in this place to be king. He's given him these tribes. And then he starts thinking, what's going to happen is these people, they may not be content. They start going back to Jerusalem to worship, and they're going to be drawn back down there. And so he has to decide what he is going to do. But God has provided for him, as we just mentioned about Rehoboam and his unfaithfulness. When he humbled himself, God was merciful. And I need to remember that. I mean, I've messed up and you mess up. And sometimes we've really messed up, but when we will humble ourselves under the mighty hand of God, he is merciful to help us get out of the mess that we make to a better place. Now, there are consequences to my earthly choices, but God is merciful. But we start somewhere. And I tell you, I believe this with all my heart. The word of God will take us from where we are to where we need to be, if we are willing. And God's ways are always better ways. And so Jeroboam needed to learn that. And there's time of opportunity here in regard to him becoming king. Here's a prime time for decisions to be made to go forward. There are many examples in the scriptures of God's mercy and compassion. But there's a time and an opportunity for us to accomplish certain things. In God's plan to bless mankind, ultimately, we see that comes through Christ. For all humanity, God has made the way. He has made an opportune time. There's a passage over in 1 Corinthians chapter 2 and in verse 9. And it says, all that God has prepared for those who love him. God made these preparations. He's made opportunity. Now is the acceptable time. Now is the day, Paul says in 2 Corinthians. So God made those opportunities. Jeroboam had an opportunity here to go forward and have blessings upon him and upon the people of the northern 10 tribes. But he let that get by him, and he made some bad choices. He had the fear of loss. And as we read here in our reading this morning, we see that what he did is he built 2 golden calves. And he established a priesthood. He didn't take priests that were the Levitical priesthood. He took priests from others. And he made sacrifices, and he made days that he set aside that were similar to those that God had given that his people were supposed to. So he brought in something else. Throughout the scriptures, this is going to be known as the sin of Jeroboam. It's going to be expressed like 22 times in various, not just an exact quote, but Jeroboam's sin. But the sin of Jeroboam. And it not only affected Jeroboam, but it affected the nation of Israel. It affected the people. And it makes a huge difference. And we need to think that about that when we think about the decisions that we make and the opportunities that we have. Sometimes we can become fearful. And if we let that fear overwhelm us or get the upper hand, then we can make decisions that are not good, and they're unhealthy, and they're destructive. And we can talk about that from all kinds of ways and weaknesses, but we have to rise above that. In 1 Corinthians chapter 10, there's a passage that Matthew says is his mom's favorite passage. There's no temptation that comes our way, but that is common to man. And that with the temptation, God will make a way of escape. So we do not have to cave in. And that's absolutely true. But what Jeroboam is afraid of is the people's hearts are going to move back to Judah. But you remember who gave Jeroboam this kingship and these tribes and made these promises. He just let his fear overwhelm him. Now, from a human perspective, from human wisdom, I might say, well, you know, there's some legitimacy to that. You know, if they get thinking about how good it is down there and the things are going on down there, their hearts may be moved. But the thing is, that is not the basis that we need to make our decisions. Certainly we're to use wisdom, and we're to think, and we're to reason, but we make them on the basis of God's will, not what's popular and common and what people are doing, or even what our fears and emotions may move us towards at the moment. but we make the decisions that would be in harmony with the will of God, and that we put our trust in God. And that's where Jeroboam fails here. He does not trust God. It's not the only example through the books of history. And let me mention this. We're talking about these books, and these are called books of history. I don't know about you. Sometimes I thought growing up history was sort of a boring class. You know what? I have to be in here. I could be out playing ball or something. But this history is here for our learning. These are history lessons to teach us. Again, over in 1 Corinthians chapter 10, the same passage I just alluded to in verse 13, the previous verse, verse 10 and 11 and 12, those verses are saying, these things are written by way of example, upon whom the end of the ages have come, so that we might not get tripped up like they did. And he gives examples of the Exodus in that particular chapter. So these things are here so we can learn, so we don't do those unfaithful things like Jeroboam did or others do, and so that we will choose to trust God and to do his will. That is a powerful, important thing. You know, as time goes on, you know, some of those things that may trouble us may be different than what they were when we were young. I wrote down here Ecclesiastes chapter 12 and verse 5. It talks about as you get old, you're afraid of high places. Years ago, I tore the roof off of our house we were building on, and I was re-roofing it, and it was just snow was just about ready to come down. And I'm up here in this tall, steep roof, and I'm up here just sort of easing along up there, and here are my boys running around like flies, is how I've been describing it. And that the light came on. I ain't no youngin' anymore. Well, that's what this describes. But there are things that change that way. But as young people, you have things that you're concerned about, things that you think that are important, challenges. How's this going to work out for me? You know, what am I going to do educationally? What am I going to do in relation to a job? Or who am I going to marry? Or who, you know, how is all this going to unfold for me? And there's an uncertainty because you don't know the answer to those things. But what we need to do is trust God and go forward and make those decisions according to his will, as wise as we can, and go to him and not let fear and intimidation and peer pressure, whether you're young or old, push you to a place that is not good. You get to make the choices about that. Certainly, there are a lot of things. So we might think about financial conjecture and plans. And all, there are all kinds of applications and things that we can make. And we certainly, I think, the wisdom literature teaches us to deal wisely. But in the essence, what we need to do is trust God and go forward. Obey God and go forward. Find peace with God and with self and go forward. But his fear of loss nudged him in a bad direction. He, as we said, set up these golden calves and these idols, and says, behold your God. Well, you know, again, idolatry, what we put above God, that's what idolatry really is. Literally, the word idolatry means the thing seen. And so you think of a graven image or something, you see that. It's the word adon. And so and that's the, basically the Greek word for see. So it's the thing that's seen. But idolatry, covetousness, is idolatry, Paul says in Colossians chapter 3 and verse 5. It's not just the thing seen, but it's that which we put in the highest authority and place in our choices rather than God. Well, that's exactly what Jeroboam does. It's not a matter of if he knew better. He did not choose better. He did not trust God. And he set up this alternate religion rather than the one that God had provided. And it cost him a lot. Well, what about me? You know, things that are challenging to me and I become fearful. What will I do? Will I seek God's will and do the best I can to accomplish that? Or I do what Jeroboam did and choose my own reasoning and will and my own path. He made his own plan, his own path, rather than the way and the path of God. Again, the wisdom literature gives a lot of insights about living life and choice and building our lives, but it is always predicated upon trusting and obeying God. The decisions that Jeroboam makes impacts his life and his family and impacts the northern 10 tribes of Israel. In the 13th chapter of this same book, if you're in 1 Kings here, chapter 13, Jeroboam comes to one of these altars that we have with the calf that's there at Bethel, it says in verse 1. And we find that God sends this young prophet. He is unnamed. We're not given a specific name. But he's a young prophet. And he comes to Jeroboam and he says, look, you know, you've left me. You've become unfaithful. And what happens is the altar is split in two. It's a sign to show you that God is going to rend this kingdom from you. And it's going to affect you and your family. And so he talks about those things here. And he tells him. And so Jeroboam reaches out his hand and says, grab that man. And he can't move his arm. And so then he makes an appeal to this young prophet that he would appeal to God, and God restored his arm. And then what happens is the king says, come into my house and I'll take really good care of you. And God said, no, you don't go anywhere else. You don't eat. You don't go back the same way you came. I've given you directions. You do exactly this. And so he doesn't take Jeroboam's reward, but what happens is as this young prophet goes back home by a different path, like God said, there's an old prophet there, and he heard about this young prophet. And so he basically snatches the young prophet and says, hey, you need to come to my house. You know, I won't. God said, go back this other way. Don't stop and don't eat. And he says, well, I'm a prophet also. God told me for you to come on. But he lied to the young prophet. Read it in 1 Kings chapter 13. And long story short, God says, why have you disobeyed me? When we listen to men, no matter who they say they are, rather than God, we're in trouble. You may remember the young prophet goes on and the lion comes out and kills him as he journeys on. So there are impacts, things impact us, and there are consequences to the choice that we made for this young prophet, for Jeroboam, and we find that there's actually going to be human bones burned on this sacrifice that was split, and that's what this young prophet tells him. And over in 2 Kings chapter 23, we're told about the fulfillment of that, where these false prophets' bones were taken out of the graves, they were put here, and they were burnt, just like the prophet said. Again, I could spend more time there, but I want to go forward. It says in the 14th chapter in verse 14, the house of Jeroboam will be cut off. And in chapter 13, verse 33 as well. As I said, that Jeroboam is not going to be the only one that's going to be the recipient of the consequences of what he did. But others got caught up in that, and they followed that, and they went that way, and it impacted them. You may remember, we've talked not too long ago about Achan in one of our studies, I don't remember exactly which one, that he hid the thing that had been banned. And he died, and I think his 36 men who went to attack Ai died. And it says over in later in Joshua chapter 22 and verse 20, Achan did not perish alone. There are consequences to decisions that we make, whether we will trust God and serve God and go forward in his ways or not. But you get to choose. But you don't get to choose the consequences. Well, I want to do what I want to do, but I want the good stuff that God said will be provided if I trust and follow him. It doesn't work that way. Again, in general, I would encourage you to read the wisdom literature, as that is helpful. And so there's going to be judgment that comes upon him. Well, lessons for us. I've been trying to pull some of these along the way, but let me go down through my list, things that I wrote down here quickly, and the lesson will be yours. Number one, consider where we came from. Consider where you came from and go forward from where you are. Not any way, but look for the right way, the way of God, the path of God, and the relationship to God's people, as is described as a body, that we are bound and tied together. As we serve and we look after each other, as Jeff talked about Jesus, the great servant, as an example to us, that we have that same spirit and we go forward in that way. And this design of God is that we help each other down that road. We're connected together. And I know we have challenges scattered out in this big city, but we need to encourage and help and do what we can, one to the other. Look around and see how we can do that. Never use the past as an excuse or justification for the wrong, nor let it keep you from going forward. I mean, that is the devil's plea. And he's used it effectively in our educational systems in recent decades. It's always somebody else's fault. You don't understand where I came from. Look through the scriptures, number one. You'll find a lot of people came from some pretty difficult places, and they went to better places. Read the book of 1 Corinthians. You talk about a mess. I mean, they grew up in a cesspool, but they didn't have to stay there, did they? And so we could see lots of examples about that. And press forward, looking for the good and the fruit that comes from righteousness. And use the opportunities that we have. He had an opportunity to put in his place a king to do right and to do good and to bring good fruit from that. We need to use opportunities. I put down two things in my notes here. Proverbs chapter 19 and verse 18, which is the passage that has impacted me for lots of years about raising my children. And he says, discipline your son while there is hope. There is a time essence involved with that. There's a prime time, and as they're growing, as they're changing, use these opportunities to help train their thinking and to influence their thinking in the ways that are right and good, and for self-discipline and self-control and selflessness. There is a time. Use these opportunities, and wherever we are in that, in the case of Deborah and myself, our kids are grown. I mean, we still try to have some influence there as wisely as we can. We have grandkids, and we're trying to help them with it. But use these opportunities. The other side of that, it says, be angry and sin not, over in Ephesians chapter 5. Do not let the sun go down on your wrath. Do not give the devil an opportunity. Don't open the door for the devil, because he's happy to come in. And this battle between the flesh and the spirit is a very real thing. Read over in Galatians chapter 5, where it talks about the works of the flesh and the fruit of the spirit, and this war and this conflict that's going on. We can't let the flesh, our lust, our desire, and our pride rule us, but rather we choose to walk by the spirit, to listen to God and follow God. That's what Jeroboam needed to do, wasn't it? But the consequences of that were great. Do not let fear hold you back from doing what's yours to do. Do not let fear hold you back. It takes courage to step forward and do something that you're fearful of. There's a passage in Matthew 25:25, and I've said this many times through the years, that it's a parable of the talents. There's a man who's given 5 talents, and 1 2, and 1 1. And the talent's actually a measure of weight of gold, we might say. And they're entrusted with that according to their ability. And then when you get down to verse 25, the one talent man, what he did was he dug a hole and he buried his gold instead of using what God entrusted him with. And then he says, okay, here it is. And he says, I was afraid. And this is the expression I've used here a lot of times. That rattles my cage. There are a lot of people in this world who have so much more ability than I do. I tell you what I like to do. I like to crawl up in the corner sometimes, just hide to myself and not worry about any of that. But this verse says, Gale, you better not. Do not let fear keep you from doing what you need to do. That's what Jeroboam did. He needed to trust God and go forward and do what God would have him to do. And that's what you and I need to do. And do what's yours to do, whether you like it or not. You know, there are a lot of things in life that maybe we'll just say, like in a marriage relationship, where I don't particularly like doing this so much, but I know I need to do this. This is good for my wife or whatever it might be. But then after I figure that out and work that for a while, you know, it's not so bad after all. Once I get used to it and figure it out and see the good it does for her. And so we can learn. But whether I feel like doing it or whether I like doing it, it's not the question. The question is, what is it that I should do? That's the question. And you get to provide the answer. Will you do that or not? So with Jeroboam and also with Rehoboam that we're not talking about so much here. You remember the Proverbs 31 passage when I was sick a couple weeks back. Matthew talked about that. I got to listen to the audio lesson. I really appreciated what he did with that. Did a great job. But one of the things you see there is their industry. And I tell you, mothers get tired. Any mothers ever get tired changing diapers and cleaning up puke on the floor? Staying up in the middle of the night when you're already so tired you can't hardly drag yourself into bed, let alone drag yourself out of bed, because my youngin needs my help, or my husband, or my wife, or whatever. But what we do is we get up and we do what's ours to do. We press forward. And you do have a choice in the matter. Joshua 24:15. Choose you this day whom you will serve. But for me and my house, we will serve Jehovah. That's the choice that Jeroboam need to make. That's the choice I need to make and you need to make. And it's to his glory. In the midst of all of this, there is good fruit. Again, Galatians 5, the fruit of the Spirit, peace, love, and joy. The will of God, it produces that which is good. And I tell you, that's good stuff. I like peace and joy. I like the fruits that are described there. I mean, that's good stuff. And that's God's way. And so, the last thing I wrote down here, the title of a sermon I did many, many years ago. I've never preached it here. Do you live and learn, or do you just live? This word is given to us so that we can learn, so that we can go forward in the way of God and glorify Him and His Son, our Redeemer, and find blessings in this world. God made us. He knows the things that really fill that empty hole in us, and His ways are able to do that. But even more importantly, when this journey is over, we're talking about that we will face God in judgment. We will stand before Him, having chosen what we will do, whether we will trust and obey Him or go our own way. He has enabled you and me. He has enabled us to choose. So let us choose wisely. If you've not obeyed the gospel, we were talking a little bit in our class this morning about that from the aspect. Sometimes we think, oh, I've got to know everything, and I've got to have all these answers, and I've got to be at this level. No, that's not the issue. The issue is I need to realize that I am lost in my sin, that I have sinned against a holy God in whom there is no sin. And I'm in trouble because if I face God in my sin, there are going to be eternal consequences to that. But He said, that's not what I want. I'm a merciful God. I'm good. And I have sent my Son so that you can have forgiveness. And so what we have to make is a decision that I will respond to God, and I will not only hear and believe and repent and confess and be baptized for the forgiveness of my sin, but I'm making myself a committed follower of Jesus. I don't have to know all, but I just have to know what He says. That's where I'm going. And that's what I'm going to do. And so young people, or not so young people, wherever you at in that, it is God who is calling. It is God who sent His Son. It is Jesus who said, go into all the world and make disciples. As this is fleshed out over in the book of Acts, as they go out doing this very thing. This morning, if you understand this great invitation of God, and need to respond to it, you can come forward as we sing this song, or reach out to somebody afterwards. If you don't understand what God has said about your salvation, and about being the disciple of Christ, just reach out to about anybody. And what we'll do is we'll find a convenient time, now or whenever, and open our Bibles, put our fingers on the passage, so you can read what God says about your salvation. If you're subject to heaven's invitation, won't you come forward as we stand?